It's 1915. A quiet hospital in occupied Belgium becomes the center of an international storm. In its hallways, a nurse whose white uniform is more than just a symbol of healing. It's a banner of faith, courage, and sacrifice. Her name is Edith Cavell. She wasn't a soldier. She didn't carry a weapon. But she stood on the front lines of conscience, where compassion clashed with tyranny, and faith demanded more than safety. It demanded everything. Today, we're telling the story of Edith Cavell, a British nurse who served Christ not with bullets, but with badges and bravery. Her life reminds us that in times of war, the battlefield stretches far beyond the trenches. When the cannons roared across Europe in World War I, Edith Cavell found herself in the heart of Brussels, running a hospital that was under German occupation. What she chose to do there would make her a hero to some, a traitor to others, and a martyr in the eyes of the church. So how does a quiet Christian nurse become one of the most famous women of the Great War? I'm Laura Lee Siemens, and this is the Church History Podcast. December 4th, 1865, in a small village just outside of Norwich, England, the first cries of a newborn child filled the air. The name of the little baby? Edith Cavell. She's the eldest of four children, born to Reverend Frederick Cavell and his wife, Louisa. Life in the Cavell home is structured around faith, morning and evening prayers, Bible readings that bookend each day. Their Christianity is not just a Sunday ritual. It shapes everything. Louisa came from a nonconformist evangelical background, while Frederick served faithfully as a vicar of the parish church. And together, they raised their children in a household where faith is both lived and taught. Education begins at home, around the kitchen table. Edith and her siblings learn their letters and sums from their parents. But eventually, Edith was sent to school, first in Norwich, then in Kingston, and later Clevedon, near Bristol. It was there, at just 18 years old, that Edith takes a defining step. She confirmed publicly, declaring her Christian faith. It wasn't just her parents' faith, it was hers. The Cavells weren't wealthy. They did have three servants, but their resources were stretched thin. But they did live generously. Whenever the families had a hot meal, Edith and her siblings were taught to take portions into the village for neighbors who were in need. Her father serves as a chaplain at the nearby workhouse. Edith was able to visit the workhouse, and here she saw poverty firsthand. These moments impressed on her heart that faith means action, and that service is not just optional. It's essential. In her late teens, Edith began working as a pupil teacher at a girls' school in the Peterborough Cathedral. Here, once again, prayer and worship saturated her daily life. She learned French, music, and art, and she especially loved learning watercolors. Here, she found a new home church, and she began teaching Sunday school. The rhythm of her life was simple: faith, education, and service. At age 21, Edith set off as a governess. Her first position was with children of a vicar in Essex. They would later talk about her and remember her as being fun yet firm. She was very serious about prayer and devotion, but also loved to play games with them. For nearly a decade, Edith served families in Norfolk, Essex, and eventually Brussels, teaching children not only their lessons, but also how to have prayer and discipline, the same that had guided her own life. But in 1895, word arrives from home. Her father is sick. Edith leaves her post in Brussels and returns to Norfolk to nurse him. And something stirs in her during those long nights at his bedside. Nursing, healing, caring. Perhaps this is where her life is meant to go. At the age of 30, Edith Cavell makes a bold decision. She leaves behind the secure, predictable life of a governess and began training as a nurse in London. Her first position was a hospital treating scarlet fever. The work was grueling, but Edith flourished, and within a year, she was accepted at the London Hospital in Whitechapel. Life in the hospital was deeply spiritual. Nurses would kneel to pray at the start and end of each shift. Death, hope, eternity, these were daily themes in the prayers. Edith feels at home in this environment where faith and healing intertwine. Her training is soon tested. In 1897, Kent was ravished by typhoid epidemic. Edith was sent there to help. It was dangerous work. She was risking infection, exhaustion, and even death. But she threw herself into the task with steady courage. For her service, she was awarded the Maidstone Typhoid Medal. This was in recognition of both her skill and her bravery. From there, her career continued to grow. She went into private nursing. By 1906, she was in charge of the other nurses at the hospital in Manchester. From the outside, Edith Carville's journey seemed steady and predictable. But in truth, really, it was anything but ordinary. Behind every step, there was a deep sense of calling. She wasn't climbing a career ladder. She was following the voice of God, one that would whisper through prayers, scripture, and also the faces of those suffering as she tended to their care. And this path was about to lead her somewhere she could never have imagined. She was now living in Brussels and under the shadow of war, and here her faith and courage would be tested like never before. Edith was stationed in Belgium, and when the German army arrived, she was faced with a choice that would cost her everything. It's 1907. Nursing in Britain had already taken great strides towards professionalism, but in Belgium, things looked very different. Hospitals here were almost entirely run by the church, where untrained nurses do their best to care for the sick. Compassion, yes. Medical training, very little. Then, coming here to work in this hospital was Dr. Depage. He was a Belgian surgeon, and he had a vision. He believed the country needed modern, professional schools for nurses, and he knew exactly who should lead it. Dr. Depage sends an invitation to Edith. Come to Belgium. Become the first matron of a brand new school for nurses. It seemed like the perfect fit. Edith Carville was a teacher, a nurse, and a woman of discipline and faith. She had a gift for languages and a heart for service. She was 41 years old, and she accepted the job. And so she moved to Brussels, this time not as a governess, but as a pioneer. From the very start, she was hands-on. She designed the uniforms, she set the standards, and she trained the very first class of Belgian nurses. The work was demanding, but Edith thrived. By 1910, she had launched Belgium's first professional nursing journal. And her students, they didn't just serve hospitals. They staffed schools, kindergartens, and clinics across the country. That same year, she was appointed the matron at a brand new secular hospital in St. Giles, stepping beyond the traditional church-run system. The changes she helps introduce are revolutionary. Hygiene, professional training, discipline. Within 5 years, her work transforms nursing in Belgium. At an international conference in 1912, Dr. Depage declared, "Our school is the benchmark of nursing standards in Belgium." By then, Edith has opened 3 additional training hospitals. A new era of modern medicine care has begun. And at its heart stands this Englishwoman, the calm voice, the stern discipline, and unshakable faith. But the world is changing. In July 1914, Edith is back home in Norfolk, visiting her elderly mother. The summer air feels heavy, uneasy. News trickles in. Austria has declared war on Serbia. The continent is trembling. Then, a telegram. War with Germany is imminent. On August 3rd, Edith Cavell makes a fateful decision. She leaves the safety of England and returns to Brussels. One day later, Britain declares war. By August 20th, German troops occupy the city. Her clinic is quickly taken over by the Red Cross. Soon, waves of wounded soldiers arrive. Belgian, French, British, even German. Edith and her staff treat them all without distinction. She writes home, "I have seen death so often that it's not strange or fearful for me." But beneath the calm surface of hospital life, something else begins to stir. Across occupied Belgium, there's whispers of resistance. Allied soldiers, trapped behind enemy lines, are desperate to escape. Locals risk everything to hide them. They dress them in civilian clothes. They forge papers and guide them to safety across the Dutch border. One day, those whispers reach Edith Cavell. She listens, she prays, and then she says yes. At first, it's just a soldier here, a soldier there, a bed for the night, a hot meal, a disguise. But soon, her clinic becomes a lifeline for dozens. Over Christmas of 1914, one fugitive soldier that she shelters is from Norfolk, her own homeland. He survives, and years later, he will carry her coffin as a pallbearer. Edith Cavell, the disciplined nurse, the devoted Christian, the faithful servant, has now stepped into the shadows of underground resistance. She is caring for the wounded in body, and now protecting the hunted in spirit. It's a dangerous calling, and one that could cost her everything. By 1915, her voice is whispered in back rooms across Brussels. Allied soldiers know, if you can make it to Edith Cavell, you have a chance. But the more lives she touches, the more attention she draws, and in occupied Belgium, eyes are everywhere. It's winter, 1914. Brussels is a city under watchful eyes. German soldiers patrol the streets. Spies lurk in cafes and alleyways. And in the midst of this tension, the doors of Edith Cavell's hospital open to a British soldier, wounded, exhausted, and desperate. She knows the risk. Hiding a soldier is punishable by execution. But still, she offers him shelter, a bed, a disguise, and a chance at escape. One soldier became two, then 10, then 15. By the spring of 1915, Edith Cavell and her network have sheltered more than 170 men and guided them toward the neutral Netherlands. Every man who passes through her care risks exposing the entire network, yet Edith presses on. She arranges guides, false papers, and safe passages. She writes home often, but the details are vague. What she is really doing cannot be committed to paper. Brussels, however, is crawling with spies. German suspicion is growing. The hospital is watched. Surprise searches become routine. Some agents even pose as Allied soldiers, hoping to trick Edith into revealing her secrets. She grows wary, and at one point she sends word, the hospital is no longer safe. But by then, it's too late. In July 1915, the German political police begin a series of arrests. Collaborators betray names, and the net closes. On August 5th, Edith is taken into custody. Betrayed, it is believed by a French collaborator named George Gaston Quinn. She is confined at St. Gilles Prison, where she spends 10 weeks, two of them in solitary confinement. She is interrogated repeatedly and tricked into signing statements that distort her actions, making them appear worse than they were. On October 7th, the trial begins. Edith, along with 34 others, is charged with conveying troops to the enemy. The German classified every soldier she helped not as a fugitive, but as troops, men who might return to fight again. The court-martial is swift. Edith admits the truth. She has helped about 200 soldiers reach the Dutch frontier. On October 11th, she is condemned to death. That evening, a final visitor is allowed, the Reverend Sterling Gahan, the last English-speaking minister who's still in Brussels. He brings her communion, and they pray together. This is Edith's final words. "I've seen death so often that it's not strange or fearful for me. Standing as I do in view of God and eternity, I realize that patriotism is not enough. I must have no hatred or bitterness towards anyone. When Graham tells her she will be remembered as a heroine and a martyr, Edith corrected him. I want to be remembered only as a nurse who tried to do her duty. At dawn, October 12, 1915, Edith is led into a courtyard. The soldiers take their positions. The rifles are fired. And with a final prayer on her lips, Edith Cavell is executed by a German firing squad. The shock is immediate. Across the world, outrage erupts. Newspapers in Britain and France and the United States condemn the execution of a nurse who had cared for the wounded on both sides. Recruitment to the British Army surges. Some even believe her death plays a role in shifting the American opinion and drawing the U.S. closer to war. Queen Alexandra sends personal condolences to Edith's mother. In London, St. Paul's Cathedral holds a memorial service that fills every seat. And after the war in 1919, her body is returned home. From Dover to London, crowds gather at railway stations as her coffin passes. At Westminster Abbey, a solemn service is held. Then, at last, Edith is laid to rest at Norwich Cathedral in the grounds of her childhood faith. Edith Cavell's life was not about headlines or glory. It was about duty, about faith, about the conviction that saving lives matters more than saving her own. She once wrote, "Someday, somehow, I will do something useful, something for people. They are most in need of it, it seems to me." And she did. Her courage reminds us that the church's role in war is not always in the trenches or the pulpits, but sometimes it's in the quiet faithfulness of a nurse who risked everything for others. Germany, for its part, defended the decision. Officials insisted that the execution was lawful. Edith, they argued, had knowingly violated military law. She had aided enemy soldiers, enabling them to return to battle. Edith had understood the risk. Justice, they said, had to be carried out. But in the court of global opinion, Germany lost. There was no justification that could erase the image of a devoted nurse shot at dawn. Edith's story spread far beyond just the church. She's featured in wartime movies and sculptures. In the years after the war, she became a symbol of sacrifice and humanity, a face that reminds the world that compassion is stronger than cruelty. Even the railway van that carried her coffin, known as the Cavell van, is preserved today as a memorial. But perhaps her most lasting contribution is to the field she gave her life to, nursing. In Belgium, she's remembered as a pioneer of modern training and standards, the women who helped transform care from charity into a profession. Around the world, her story inspires nurses, doctors, and caregivers, those who dedicate themselves to service no matter the risk. Edith's life began in a little pastor's home in Norfolk. But during her life, God carried her across classrooms, hospital wards, and war-torn streets. She went from being a governess to a nurse, from a matron to a martyr. Her journey was marked by one unshakable thread, her faith. As a Christian, she believed that every life mattered. She nursed Germans and allies alike, because to Edith, suffering knew no nationality. Her words captured her heart. Patriotism is not enough. I must have no hatred or bitterness towards anyone. Her death galvanized armies and shaped propaganda, but more importantly, her life testified moral courage, the courage to forgive, to serve, to love, and the courage to face death. It's been more than a century since her death, and her story still asks hard questions. Do we live with compassion? Do we forgive our enemies? Do we serve others even if it costs us? This has been the Church History Podcast, and we're doing our series, The Church at War. I'm Laura Lee Siemens. Join me next time as we continue to uncover the stories of men and women whose faith shaped their courage on history's darkest battlefields. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app so you don't miss an episode. We release new content every Monday. And don't forget to check out our website at lauraleesiemens.com for more information and additional resources. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week as we continue our journey through the incredible history of the church.